Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
This is 101.9 High FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon of Linksfield Chul. And here we are, starving. Well, not too bad. It's only 1 in the afternoon, but we are live on this fast day, the 17th of Tammuz. So much to explore. The first thing I want to do is really unpack this day, why we're fasting, what's the meaning, especially in the timely relevance. So yeah, let's get into this. We have some a cappella music. Thank God for that. I don't know how I would live without some form of music, even if it's not musical instruments, but it's literally helps me get through the day. So here we are. And hope if you're fasting, you're fasting well. Hope you're having a decent day. And praying for blessings, praying that whatever we're trying to accomplish through the fast should actually be accomplished both within us and within the world, right? We don't do things that are meaningless. We don't just do things as token deed for memory, but rather we're there to internalize the lesson. We're there to grieve. We're there to feel. And we're there to build. Whatever we do has significance, not only in redeeming the past, but in building the future and giving meaning to the present. So what we're doing is powerful. So here we are. So let's unpack it. What are we doing on this fast day? What are we entering now, the 3 weeks of mourning? Why mourning? What are we trying to do? So some history, some of the history might be familiar, some of it might not. Hopefully it's all accurate, that much I could try. There were two temples that stood in Jerusalem, both of them before the Common Era. The second one actually was destroyed in the year 70 Common Era, but it's hundreds of years. Most of its history was before Common Era. So just understand that both temples that stood in Jerusalem are a long time ago. Before the modern world that we know, the birth of Christianity, for example, was only at the end of the Second Temple. Islam was hundreds of years later. Most of Europe was not built up. Eastern Europe pretty much was a wasteland. This is 1,500 years before America was discovered. The destruction of the temple. So this is a long time ago, just to give you some frame of reference. Both temples collectively plus minus are about 900 years with a 70 year break in between. And it covers pretty much before 1000 BCE till 70 Common Era plus minus. And during the times, you're living in the times of empires, especially the Second Temple. The Second Temple, you're living in the empire of, it starts off, the first temple is destroyed by the Babylonians, and then we have the Persians who allow us to build a temple, and then we have the Greeks who show up, and eventually we have the Romans, and the Romans come and destroy the temple. So this was a time of empires, and it was a time that the Jewish people lived in their land. And this is often an unknown part of history, especially now with the modern context of what goes on in Israel, the land. There's a lot of history denial or a lot of history ignorance. So let's try to unpack it, at least in a very short form. I'm not a historian, but we could deal with basic agreed upon facts. So the Jewish people arrived in Israel about 3,300 years ago. They arrived under the leadership of a man named Joshua. Joshua was the student and loyal second in command to Moshe, the greatest leader who took us out of Egypt, who brought down the Ten Commandments from Sinai, who led us in the desert for 40 years. His student, Joshua, literally a month after the passing of Moshe, Joshua takes us into the land of Israel. And in that land, we live about 900 years. That's a long time for people to live in the land. The first few hundred years was a time of uncentralized, decentralized government. It was a people finding its land, the 12 tribes, each one settling into different parts that were designated to them. There was anarchy multiple times in the book of Shoftim, the book of Judges. It describes Ish Kala Yasha Bein of Yasa. It was a time of chaos where each man did whatever he wanted. It was a very, very weak government. It was lots of little, you know, little groups trying to take care of themselves, lots of enemies. You already read then about various nations that are living next to them that are trying to wage war, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Philistines, etc., etc., the people from the north and the people from the south and the people from the east. Thank God there's nobody really on the west other than the Mediterranean, but a tremendous amount of chaos. And eventually, a few hundred years after they settle into the land, the Jewish people approach the leader at the time, Shmuel, Samuel, the prophet, and they ask for some form of governance. They ask for a king to be like all the other nations, which he didn't like that expression. And he talks to God, and God agrees, and a government is formed under the rulership of a man named Saul, King Saul. King Saul is not a king for very long, a few years, according to some opinions, and he is taken over in quite a dramatic and full of drama, literally, story, as it's described quite colorfully in the book of Shmuel, the book of Samuel. He's inherited by his son-in-law, who he really didn't like, King David, famous King David. And David rules for 40 years. Interesting, just yesterday, they posted an article on a video from the archaeological heritage site in Israel, where they just discovered a moat that was outside the city of Jerusalem, and they could trace it back thousands of years. It could go even further back, they say, even to when the Jewish people arrived in Israel, but they don't have the evidence for it yet. But they literally discovered a moat that was being used around the city of Jerusalem while the people that we're talking about lived, King David, and he was inherited by his son, King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech, who's known as the wisest man who ever lived. King David wrote, besides the fact that he was a king, he wrote the book of Psalms, Tehillim. Solomon, King Shlomo HaMelech, wrote the book of Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim, and he wrote Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, and he wrote Mishlei, Proverbs, etc., both very, very, very influential men. And these three kings, King Saul, King Solomon, and King David, were the only kings that really ruled over the entire commonwealth of Israel, because right after Solomon's death, his son Rehavam made some really bad strategic moves. He had an option of consolidating power, but he decided to enforce even worse taxes that his father leveled on the people. He made even the heavier taxes. That didn't go down well. And a bunch of other gripes that the tribes that lived in the north of Israel had against the kingdom, which they felt was pretty much very south-based and had the interests of the southern families at heart. So the northern group of tribes, which was actually the majority of the Jewish people, 10 northern tribes, split away and build their own kingdoms. So now there's two kingdoms. There's the kingdom of Judah in the south, which is basically the tribe of Yehuda, which is the family of David, and Benjamin, which was their whole area was within that. They ruled within that area. And then there was obviously some Kohanim and Leviim. But other than that, there was not much going on. And then there's the northern tribes. And the northern tribes have 10 tribes. And they have a group of kings which are absolutely chaotic. I cannot describe, literally not a single one of them was ethical, moral. It was just embarrassing. And eventually that kingdom collapses. That kingdom collapses when a kingdom from the north called the Assyrian kingdom, led by a fellow named Sanherib, comes and invades them. And his strategy was to not just take over a country, but to exile all its people. He didn't want them to rebel, so he would take his people, the captives, and literally spread them out all over the world. And by the time they would settle in their new society, he would be long dead, right? And that's what he did. The famous 10 tribes that were exiled over 100 years before the southern kingdom is destroyed, the northern kingdom is destroyed. Interesting, we don't actually have a day to commemorate the destruction of the 10 tribes. Obviously, it wasn't a specific day, and it wasn't a specific moment. It was a long process over many years where he exiled the 10 tribes. But the southern kingdom, through miracles that take place, which are described in the book of Kings, Malachim, the southern kingdom survives this onslaught. But by now, the Jewish people have literally been diminished by 80%, right? I mean, the 10 tribes, if you do the math, 10 out of 12, plus minus 80 to 85% of the Jewish people literally were lost, and most of them lost to history, because, you know, that's the big mystery of history, is what happened to the 10 tribes. Lots of people have been searching. There's lots of hypotheses, lots of so-called discoveries. It's definitely taken over the fantasy of people over generations. But we don't actually know with 100% certainty what happened. But here's what we do know. We know what happens after that to the tribe of Yehuda and Binyamin, the destruction of the first temple, second temple, which I would definitely be exploring, please God, right after this a cappella song. This song is called Eicha, which is literally based on the words that we read on the night of Tisha B'Av. How has the city of Jerusalem, become desolate and destroyed? It's a song that literally describes the city of Jerusalem, which we're unpacking at this moment. So this is Eicha, 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
So this is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson. You were just listening to the beautiful Eicha. And what we're doing today is unpacking some of the history of the day. It's one of my big passions. I love history. I remember hearing from somebody, I can't give them the credit because I don't remember who it was, that the second most important subject after Judaism, after faith and tradition, is history. And I personally believe that with all my heart. It's much more important than any other. Not that other stuff aren't important. Math is important, and lots of other topics are important. Language is important. But I would say history, because if you don't know where you're coming from, you have no idea where you're going. Like history, not so much the details, 400 soldiers stood on this side and 800 soldiers on that side. Not the minutia, but the story of history. What happened? Where do we come from? Who's who in the zoo? What took place? How did we come? So in general, world history, but especially your tradition. What does it mean to be a Jew? Where have we been? What has formed us into who we are? Without history, it is so hard to make sense of the present. You know, when you just sit there thinking that the world was invented the year that you were born, and everything is just, what's anti-Semitism? Or what's going on? And the history of Israel, ever since we've arrived there, there's been enemy. And you're like, since we arrived with Joshua, we've had issues. Truth is, even when we were on the way to Israel with Moshe, we were already having issues. Truth is, if you go even further back, Avram Avinu was already having issues in the land. So it pretty much goes back to the beginning. So before the break, we were talking about the destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel, which took place about 130 years before the destruction of the second temple. So just in the Jewish historical date, it's about 556 BCE before Common Era, the year 3205, if you're counting in those numbers, because this year we're 5780, so the year 5725. So basically, 2,600 years ago, plus minus, is when the northern kingdom is destroyed. The southern kingdom continues to flourish. They have a pretty rough king by the name of Menashe. His father was a great lineage, a great person, Hizkiyahu. But Menashe was really hectic and huge, huge idolater. And at that stage, Hashem's kind of already making his decision to destroy. Eventually, he's captured, and his son Amon doesn't do a much better. Amon doesn't do a much better job, and his grandson Yoshiyahu was quite a much better person, and he was 8 when he was proclaimed king, and he followed the ways of King David, etc. And he really, really tried to do the best he can. And while he's king and he's renovating the temple, he's doing a lot of work at this stage, a fellow named Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, shows up on the scene and starts giving his prophecies. And nobody hears him. Nobody believes him. But he's telling everybody the destruction is coming, the destruction is coming, but nobody hears him. Nobody wants to believe it. And Yoshiyahu starts getting worried about the prophecies that he hears from Yirmiyahu and other prophets who are going around at the same time. And he decides, just in case, he hides the Holy Ark, the famous Holy Ark, in an underground chamber that was already built hundreds of years earlier by Solomon, King Shlomo. He buries it there. It's chaos. There's issues between Egypt, who's on the way to fight the north. You see, Israel in those days, these days it has its own issues, but in those days it was a great thoroughfare for all the kingdoms who were fighting for each other. So there was always the kingdom, let's say it was the Babylonians or the Assyrians, the Syrians, anybody that's pretty much living anywhere in the north, including big parts of Europe. And they're trying to get down into Africa. They're trying to get down to Egypt, which was a major kingdom during those years, or other places. Israel somehow always ends up on the maps. Israel was this like train station of armies. And often Israel could stand on the side, but much more often they can't stand on the side and they have to pick sides. And often they pick the wrong side and things go very, very, very bad for them. Anyways, then there's a king that's appointed. His name is Eliakim, who was a son of Yoshiyahu, and he gets renamed Yehoyachin. And then he appoints his Yoyakim appoints his son Yehoyachin, which is very similar names, but these were names that they didn't have for themselves. These were names that they got from the Babylonians who were appointing them, etc. And then slowly but surely, Israel, the Jerusalem and the kingdom starts falling apart. First, the Babylonians come and make one exile. They exile Yehoyakim, and they start exiling them to Babylonia. They exile the elites, but they still allow the Jewish people to live in Jerusalem. So Yehoyakim is exiled. He's not really believing to the words of Yirmiyahu. Jeremiah is trying to convince everybody. Then there's another invasion, and then the next king is exiled. And meanwhile, Yirmiyahu is continuing to prophesy. Things are happening. At the same stage, you're already having prophets that are showing up in the Babylonia, because by now there was already a few hundred Jews that were exiled to Babylonia, if not a few thousand. And they start developing their own community. And over there, you develop the prophet Ezekiel. Yechezkel shows up and starts prophesizing. And eventually, the Jewish people who chose the wrong side, they chose to rebel against the Babylonians, even though Yirmiyahu so many times said, don't rebel. They chose to rebel anyway, which caused absolute destruction for them. And the temple... First, they come in and lay siege on the 10th of Tevet for the city of Jerusalem, about a year and a half before the destruction of the temple. So this is the year 425 BCE. They lay siege outside the walls, and that's why we actually fast on the 10th of Tevet, which is usually December, January time. And then about 15, 16 months later, we have the destruction. King Tzidkiyahu, who was the king at the time, didn't listen to the prophet, decided to rebel against Babylonia, and it brought incredible destruction. They broke into the walls of Jerusalem on the 9th of Tammuz. So that's about, in the Hebrew date, that's 8 days ago, because today we're on the 17th. Oh, they didn't institute a fast for that, but as we'll talk in a few minutes, they instituted for the second temple's destruction. The walls were broken on the 17th, but the first temple, the walls were broken on the 9th of Tammuz, and exactly a month later, they burn up. They late on the 9th of Av, they set the structure of the Temple of Fire. It burns for 24 hours. That is why we fast on the 9th of Av, which is 3 weeks from now on Tuesday, but the mourning doesn't end right after the fast. Often people, right away, getting messages, Rabbi, can I have a haircut? The fast is over. And the answer is no, because the fasting and the mourning and continues till the next day, because the fire that burned for pretty much 24 hours burned deep into the 10th of Av. So the first temple, which is destroyed by the Babylonians, Babylonia is plus minus in the area of what we call today Iraq. So that's east of Israel, a bit northeast of where Israel is today, they destroyed the first temple. And there was an aftermath as well. The aftermath was that the Babylonians appointed, they didn't exile all the Jews. They only exiled a relatively small amount. They allowed a lot of Jews to stay in Israel. And he appointed a fellow named Gedaliah to be the ruler of the Jewish people. And the idea was to now live in Israel peacefully under the Babylonians. The rebellion was over. All the rebels were killed. Tzidkiyahu and his whole family was killed. Tzidkiyahu was blinded. It was a terrible story. The king, all his elites were killed, but many of the Jews stayed over there under Gedaliah. But that didn't even last for 2 months, because 2 months later, a fellow named Yishmael, the son of Netanya, who was incited by a king that lived outside of Israel to the east, the king of Ammon, he decided that he needs to rule, not Gedaliah. So on Rosh Hashanah, remember, this is the 9th of Av, the temple was destroyed. Rosh Hashanah is 5 weeks later. Rosh Hashanah that very year, he betrays Gedaliah, literally kills him. And he's then chased away. Yishmael, after he kills Gedaliah, is chased away. And he runs back to his supporter, the king of Ammon. And now the Jewish people have a decision to make what to do. Should they stay in the land or not? And they became very afraid that the Babylonians will avenge the Jews for killing the leader that he appointed, that the Babylonians appointed. So he schlepped everybody down to Egypt against the will of and the prophecies of Jeremiah. Jeremiah was prophesizing, you don't have to go down to Egypt. God will protect you here. But not only did they go down, they schlepped Jeremiah down with them. There's a tradition that happens that says that at this time, when Jeremiah comes down to Egypt, he meets up with Plato, the famous Greek philosopher, and they have discussions. There is a source for that. Who knows? Did they meet? Did they share interesting conversations? But yes, Jeremiah ends up in Egypt, and that pretty much ends the story of the first temple. And that's, by the way, why we fast on the day after Rosh Hashanah. You can't fast on Rosh Hashanah. It's called the Fast of Gedaliah, to commemorate the ultimate destruction, which wasn't even the destruction of the temple. The destruction of the Jewish community in Israel happened when one Jew killed another Jew. Yishmael killed Gedaliah in a terrible betrayal. So here we have it. So many of the fast days that we commemorate during the year have to do with the destructions of the temple. The 10th of Tevet is when the Babylonians laid siege. The 17th of Tammuz today, which we haven't gotten to the story yet, that's the second temple. That's when the Romans break through the walls. Tisha B'Av is when both temples are destroyed. The fast of Gedaliah is the ultimate destruction of the first Jewish Commonwealth. And the other two fasts are Yom Kippur, which is obviously the Day of Atonement, and the Fast of Esther, which has to do more with the Purim story, which actually took place between the two temples. So yes, today is history, maybe because I'm hungry and history excites me, but that's the history, and we'll continue after this song that we're playing now.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon on 101.9 High FM.
We are running out of time. This is 101.9 High FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon. The final segment that we are doing today, and today is history. Today we're fasting and we're exploring why we're fasting. So let's unpack the destruction of the second temple. Till now we were talking about the first temple. We have 10 minutes or even less till Craig tells me I'm out of time to talk about the second temple. So basically the second temple was built 70 years. It started being built 70 years after the destruction of the first. At that stage, the Persians were in control. Lots of things happened over the 400 plus years of the second temple. We went from the Persians to the Greeks and eventually to the Romans. And the Romans played quite a role of the in the last years of the second temple. It's hard to actually pinpoint a moment where things start going chaos, but I'm going to choose the moment of Herod, which is actually a full 100 years before the destruction of the temple. Herod managed to take over the country of Israel through it from his father, who took it over from the Maccabees. He was a slave, he was a servant of the Maccabees, and he managed to build alliances and eventually take over, and he inherited it to his son. And Herod was a menace, an incredible builder, a very, very charismatic, but an absolute madman, absolute chaos. There's a lot of stuff that he built or built during his time that still survive in Israel. Even his grave, it's called Herodian. I've been there, it's quite a spot to see. And one of the things he actually did in a moment of piety, which was very abnormal for him, was he rebuilt the second temple. He built a beautiful, beautiful temple, and the temple that was destroyed was his. But that temple only lasted 80 years, right? He built it in the year 19 BCE, and the temple was destroyed in the year 70 Common Era, so it's literally 90 years that it stood. But before that, there was a temple for hundreds of years. He just renovated it, and he renovated it over 8 years. It was finished in the year 11 BCE, and then he dies in the year 1. But he made sure that it was quite a scene. Many, many Jews were killed during that time. And it's chaos. Some of the great leaders have passed away. Hillel, the great Hillel, passes away in the year 9 Common Era. The Jews try to negotiate with Rome, but it begins with anarchy, and anarchy really starts in the year 10. And it lasts all the way for 60 years till the temple was destroyed. There's back and forth, various alliances. There's lots of corruption. Eventually in the year 29, the Sanhedrin, which was the Jewish head court, move out of the temple. It's just too much lawlessness, violence, and bloodshed, and they can't last over there. We see the beginning of Christianity in the year 30. And there is a crazy emperor, Caligula, that takes over in the year that basically puts in some crazy rules into the year 40, which causes even more chaos and more rebellion. And eventually there's lots of infighting that's taking place within the Jewish community. The year 55 is a pivotal year when lots of political groups emerge and lots of different alliances. And finally, in the year 65, a huge rebellion by many Jewish factions based on how the Romans treated them. And in the year 66, Vespasian comes in to reassert the Roman authority, and he slowly takes over the whole of Israel, and eventually lots of infighting takes place in Jerusalem with an absolute crazy, crazy civil war. Groups of militia even set fire to the vast food storage house, which had enough money to last for years, just because they wanted the people to rebel. And eventually the Romans cause a huge siege and huge starvation, which is described in quite graphic detail, unbearable detail, in the Talmud. And eventually the Jews, who realize that the common enemy is worse than their neighbor, start fighting against the Romans. And on the 17th of Tammuz in the year 69. Other opinions say in the year 70. The walls in Jerusalem were breached, and eventually the Romans reached the temple and set fire for it on the 9th of Av. And all that remained from the temple is what we have, the Western Wall. It's not the wall of the temple, by the way. It's the wall, it's the retainer wall that kept up the Temple Mount. The temple was on the Temple Mount. There was walls all around the mountain to hold up. You needed to make sure the mountain didn't cave in on itself. So they built a retainer wall around the mount. So the Western Wall is the Western retainer wall, which is basically the wall of the Temple Mount. And the temple was actually built on the mountain. So that was the terrible, sad ending to the second temple destruction. So as mentioned, the 9th of Tammuz is when the first temple's walls were breached. The 17th of Tammuz, which is today, is when the second temple's walls were breached by the Romans. We commemorate both of them, both what happened, the first temple and the second temple today. The breaching of the walls, which has a very, very deep meaning, and that's why I want to finish off today's show, is once the walls are breached, the destruction's inevitable. Once our borders aren't strong, the destruction's inevitable. And unfortunately, we had our own mini destruction this, 9 months ago with Simchat Torah, October 7th. When our borders were breached and chaos ensued, there was a stark moment of not only history, but bringing back lots of moments of history that it's hard to think about. What we saw on that day was a microcosm of so much of Jewish history and so much what took place, whether it was the Babylonians, the Romans, the Nazis, the Cossacks, etc. And the message is, first and foremost, no infighting. The enemy is outside of us. The enemy is not each other. No matter how justified you think to feel that the enemy is your neighbor, it never is. That's not the enemy. And when we see so much of the infighting coming back into the Jewish community, it's heartbreaking. We had so much infighting before October 7th, then we had a moment of awakening, and a lot of it is coming back, and we can't afford it. And the second message is straightforward, and that is Israel's borders need to be strong. Our borders need to be strong. We have to take care of our security. We have to make sure the walls do not get breached. Because once the walls are breached, it's inevitable that destruction follows. So let's keep our walls. And I'm not only talking about physical, I'm talking about metaphysical. We're talking about, I'm giving a shout out to our incredible CSO here and to all the, to our military, to the IDF, for all the great work of securing the borders so that we can live in peace in our land. May the 17th of Tammuz, even before the fast day ends, may it usher in much better times. May we see miracles in our time with ultimately the greatest prophecy and miracle of all, the coming of Mashiach. This is Rabbi Levi Avtson. I hope you enjoyed the history today. There was a lot of history condensed into one moment, into one small little show, finishing off with a song of comfort after the ads. It's called Akiva Nichantanu, a beautiful story from the Talmud about the destruction of the temple and its timeless promise of the future. Have a great day.